Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the formal proceedings, each week I ask a question of the community and the people in the room. And the question that I ask is, how are the children? And the reason I ask that question is because I believe that when our children are cared for, when they're well-educated, when they have a roof over their heads and caring adults in their lives, they're much more likely to succeed as adults. So each week we invite people in to talk about issues that affect young people and children. And this week we have Jose Luis Juarez Perez. He's 16 years old and he's a junior at Roosevelt. Jose Luis, could you please come forward? Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Mayor Potter and City Council, my name is Jose Luis Juarez Perez, and I'm glad to be here today. To be a youth these days is hard because of the gangs and the violence in the streets. You also need support because young people don't even have parents to support them. For young women, it can be difficult because men disrespect them. In North Portland, where I live, in a 10th stage high school at Roosevelt campus, the only bilingual high school in Portland, it's hard for youth because many families don't have enough money. They need to move often and do not have enough food to eat and can barely buy clothes because of the economics of their family. My life has been hard. I have three older brothers that used to hang around with a gang. One of my brother got stabbed at a party by another gang. I saw what happened to him, but I couldn't do anything because I was small and I got shot. Since that day, my oldest brothers had to stop hanging around gangs because of their kids and their wives. But I had a lot of anger inside me against the gang that stabbed my brother, and I started hanging around with the other gang. I started doing bad stuff and got kicked out of school freshman year. After half a year at internary school, I'm back at Roosevelt High School. I also met a girl that became my girlfriend and tried to stop hanging around with the gang. Sometimes I still went to get protection from the gang, but my girlfriend helped me realize there's another protection, only being yourself and with your family. I got involved in a program like Aventura Latina, a youth program that helps in the community and churches give out food and to poor people, and community service like cleaning the forest. I also another program I participate is in OCHA, the Oregon Council for Hispanic Advancement. We plan activities that we're going to do with the middle school kids at George Middle School in North Portland. We talk to them about not getting into gangs, about teamwork, and about their health. I was getting out of the hanging with the gangs because of the programs and my girlfriend. My girlfriend passed away not that long ago. She always wanted me to do something in my life. I started getting into this program so I wouldn't get into gangs anymore. I knew from experience that there are programs and jobs that can help you and make better decisions for your lives. I was asked to help New Columbia community in North Portland deal with gangs this summer. This might include doing projects with kids who tries to get involved with gangs and to keep New Columbia calm and help the kids from causing trouble. Since I was little, I have worked at many jobs. I helped my parents sell Mexican bread in the streets. I helped them pick up and sell wood pallets so my family could make money when we're going through some hard times. I also delivered newspaper to get my family some money. My brother and I sold ice cream to gather money for our supplies and clothes for school. Now with Juarez Fencing and Landscaping Crew, a youth-owned business, I clean yards, pull out weeds, and help people move their furniture. This crew is like a family to me. We help each other out when we need something, and works keep us out of the streets. I assist Ari Shine Inc., a nonprofit consult firm, on United Way Community Needs Assessment 2007. This community needs assessment includes information about successful youth, stable, affordable housing, low income, seniors, and health care access. Recently, my friend and I organized a program to get driver's education called Making the Right Choice. We asked a mentor to teach us, and we have the class at my house every Tuesday after school. Our program, Making the Right Choice, helped us to get our permits and our license so we can drive to work. We are starting to raise money for our program to help pay off the tickets that some of us owe. We raise a pot of money for insurance because insurance is expensive, especially for young men. If you have any ideas that will help us raise some money, we will be glad to hear about them. I thank you, Tom Potter, because of the immigration that happened yesterday, that you were with us and not against us. And you know, thank you that you support us, and we need more support that we can have an agreement in the United States. And I appreciate what you did yesterday. They talked to everybody that had issues with the immigration yesterday. And I say thank you for your time and listening to me. And I appreciate the opportunity to share my story to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Jose Luis. Your story is a really good story because of how it turned out and how you're turning out. So I really want to thank you for being a mentor to younger people, keeping them out of gangs, working on problems at New Columbia, at McCoy Park. Those, I think, demonstrate not just being very mature, but also a leader. And I want to thank you for that. I also understand you have some supporters and family here. Could you, could all you folks who are here with Jose Luis stand up so you could be? Excellent. Let's give Jose Luis a hand.
Good job. Good job.
And thank you, and you and your family and friends. We're going to begin the formal part of the proceedings, and that may be a little slow in some spots. So you're more than welcome to leave anytime you wish.
Or might not.
Council, come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Sten? Potter?
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the communication.
Item 674, request of David Yandell to address Council regarding results of a police bureau and high-risk grade schools project.
Dave Yandell, are you here? He does some great programs with the police and young people, so we appreciate that. We'll move to the consent agenda. Do any commissioners wish to pull any items from the consent agenda?
No.
Any members of this audience wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. We'll move to the time certain. Please read the 9:30 a.m. time certain.
Item 675, Office of Youth Violence Prevention and Open Meadow Schools City Core Project.
John?
Good morning, Mayor, members of City Council. My name is John Canda, Director of the Office of Youth Violence Prevention. I won't be before you long. I just would like to introduce the staff and the students from Open Meadows High School who are here to make a presentation about our City Core project.
Folks, please come forward.
Good morning. My name is Kara Van Gorder-Lassoff, and I'm the project leader for Open Meadows City Core.
I'm
My name is Charlie Diaz. I used to be involved in 18th Street and the TLR Crip gangs.
My name is Abby Parker, and because of youth violence, my boyfriend has been put in ICU several times.
My name is Nadia Gazelle. When I was 10 years old, my mother went to prison because of drugs. This was one of the reasons that led my brother into a gang, and he was eventually stabbed by an enemy.
My name is Michelle Blackshire. In the last 4 years, youth gang membership has increased 31.5% in Monoma County.
My name is Dylan Grimjude, and one of my closest friends has been hospitalized numerous times because of violence.
My name is Cassandra Smith, and about a month ago, I had witnessed a gang shooting in front of my house.
My name is Sherry Gilson, and someone I know was shot and killed at a bus stop on Killensburg just wearing blue.
My name is Angelica Whitney, and I recently lost a cousin due to suicide. When our group first found out that we'd be able to work with the Mayor's Office of Youth Violence Prevention, we wanted to address a project that would address some of the causes of youth violence. Today we'll be sharing what we have learned about youth violence and what we recommend based on our work.
Taking on the complicated issue of youth violence was overwhelming, so we decided to narrow our focus on violence prevention. When we looked at violence prevention programs that were out there, the term social skills kept coming up. That is how we came to create this problem statement. Many youth in Portland have poor social skills or do not always choose to use good social skills. This can lead to many types of violence. CityCorps will research what you think it would take to help them use strong social skills in all situations.
First, we wanted to see if research had been done about the connection between social skills and youth violence. We found several studies that prove this connection. For example, researchers have linked a lack of social problem-solving skills to youth violence. When children and adolescents are faced with social situations for which they are unprepared emotionally and cognitively, they may respond with aggression or violence.
In order to better understand youth violence in general and to begin to approach our problem statement, we went on field trips and invited people in the community to come speak to us.
Based on our experiences in the community and the conversations we had with the people who knew a great deal about youth violence and social skills, we decided that we needed to develop a survey in order to learn what teens think about these issues. We created a survey to find out what social skills teens find the most difficult. We also wanted to know what teens think they need in order to practice nonviolent social skills.
We surveyed 200 middle and high school students ages 10 to 20 in Northeast Portland. In addition to student surveys, we also surveyed teachers and interviewed students and teachers.
Our survey had 10 questions. One question asked students to rate how easy or hard certain social skills were. We chose the following social skills because we believe they're the most important in life. What we learned from this question was the social skills that students identified as the hardest were dealing with anger, trusting others, being a good leader, and avoiding trouble. 75% of the students we surveyed said that they want to improve on at least one of the social skills we listed.
In order to address our problem statement on our survey, we also asked the following question. In your opinion, what could schools and others in the community do to support you in using the skills listed in question one even more often? The responses to this question helped us start to form the recommendations that we will be sharing with you today.
In order to get a better sense of the teens we surveyed, we felt that it was important to know how often they faced situations that could lead to violence. We asked how many conflicts have you been in during the past 3 months? And found the majority of people we surveyed had been in at least one conflict in the past 3 months. A follow-up question to this showed that more than half of these conflicts ended in physical violence. We also asked, how do you usually handle conflicts with other people? 40% of teens we surveyed said they try to handle conflicts nonviolently. 38% of teens said they handle conflicts with physical or verbal violence. 9% said they don't know how to handle conflicts or that it depends on the situation. Based on our survey questions and interviews, we learned that most teens would like to handle their conflicts nonviolently, but do not always have the tools or support they need to do so. We believe that if even one of the recommendations we will be making today are put into effect, the percentage of teens who handle conflicts with violence will decrease.
One of the biggest things we believe based on our research is that social skills should be taught more in schools and with other organizations that work with the youth. The reasons why we believe are there is a proven connection between social skills and youth violence. Therefore, teaching more social skills could reduce youth violence in our community and in schools. Most students want to improve their social skills. We also believe that schools today focus too much on testing. PE, art, and music programs are cut due to testing pressures and funding. If teens have outlets like PE, art, and music, they will have opportunities to practice their social skills and would be more engaged in schools. All of the teachers we surveyed said that they believe social skills should be taught at all grade levels in schools. If school is supposed to help prepare people for life, then this makes sense because social skills are life skills. In order to support teachers and youth workers in their teaching of social skills, we have created a research brochure that we will make available to PPS and other community organizations.
Our second recommendation is that we would like to see the City of Portland increase its support of mentoring programs for youth. Why should you support mentoring? On our visit to Big Brothers Big Sisters, we learned about a study that showed that after 18 months with their mentor, little brothers and little sisters were 46% less likely to begin using illegal drugs, 27% less likely to begin using alcohol, 52% less likely to skip school, more confident of their performance in schoolwork, 1/3 less likely to hit someone, and they got along better with their families.
We know that having a mentor could take a huge difference in a person's life. And we also learned that there is between an 800 and 1,000 child waiting list within Big Brothers Big Sisters organization in Monoma County. Our specific recommendations are: continue to play leadership roles in Connected by 25 coalition being coordinated by our school's foundation. The city should expand support to their other mentoring programs. Continue to support Big Brother Big Sisters. As the city council supports businesses to promote employee volunteerism, the city should offer employees incentives to volunteer with youth. You should look at companies like Umpqua Bank and Standard who are already doing this.
We are grateful for this opportunity and would like to thank the City of Portland, the Office of Youth Violence Prevention, and community organizations we visited and guest speakers. One way this project has affected me is now that I know my hopes of living in a safer community can come true.
because of this program, I will try to stop youth violence whenever I see it.
City Corp has given me a better understanding of youth violence and social skills.
I have learned that the more mentoring programs that we have before or after school, the less youth violence there will be. Because of this experience, I will help make a difference in my community.
Because of this program, I learned that the city actually does care about what you think.
Because of this experience, I will now handle conflicts differently.
City Corps has influenced me to make better decisions in my life. For the future, I will try to help other teens and people to stop what they're doing that's negative in their life. Do Mayor Potter or any of the other commissioners have any questions?
Thank you. Well, I want to thank Open Meadows for the presentation today. I really appreciated the survey that the young people did, the findings and the recommendations. And I know that all of the city council will be looking at those recommendations to see what we can do to make Portland a better place and a safer place for all of our young people.
Good job. Excellent presentation.
Excellent.
Can we give these folks a hand? Thank you. Thank you all for being here. Please read the 9:45 time certain.
Item 676, accept the Portland Office of Transportation report on street paving, street preservation implementation report plan.
Commissioner Adams.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the City Council. It has been a pleasure, if not a sometimes challenging pleasure, to serve as Transportation Commissioner and be responsible for the stewardship of the city's local transportation system, a $7.1 billion asset for the public. Over the course of my tenure as commissioner in charge of the Portland Office of Transportation, we have worked hard to make PDC the most efficient and effective and the best local government transportation system in the world. In seeking to take the organization in a new direction, hired Sue Keel, and I have replaced or have put in new folks in nearly every senior management position in the agency. We are committed to building an organization that continually strives to identify its weaknesses and where it can improve. Audit Services has aided us in this endeavor through a series of audit reports. I've convened, in response to those audits, a paving task force to identify and analyze ways in which PDOT could apply the recommendations of the auditor to improve service. The paving task force that you're going to hear from today was central in our efforts to put this report together, and in doing so has provided us with an invaluable service to our agency and the public at large. We are all fortunate that we have had leaders in both industry and labor to work with our staff on these changes. The results have been a rich analysis in a multidimensional study of the problems. Members of the task force were very generous, not only with their expertise, but their time. And I'd like to thank them by name, starting with Kevin Spellman, who served as chair of the task force, who took an early retirement as president of a major local civil construction firm and serves as an adjunct professor of engineering at OSU. And Portland Community College. Without Kevin's expert eyes and ears, we would not have gone this far and as well as we have. I'd also like to thank the other members of the task force, Ted Odlin, Andre Baugh, Richard Beadle, Lynn Laubach, Chuck Schrader, and Troy Hoagland. I'd also like to thank Sue Keel and the good folks, the entire PDOT team, the good folks at Transportation, who have worked tirelessly over these past months to implement the recommendations of the auditor and to meet the expectations of both myself, the task force, and the public. I'd also like to thank the auditor shop, specifically Drummond Kahn, for his willingness to review our progress at sort of the midpoint. And we are happy to report that his office has enclosed a letter giving their thoughts on the progress that we've made so far. And I'm happy to report that they are very encouraging. Please know that this is simply the first of many steps to implement the recommendations set out in the paving audit. We are continuing to put this plan into practice and develop the necessary tools to meet expectations for the residents of the city of Portland. They should expect excellent work from us, as we expect from ourselves. And with that, I'll turn it over to Sue Keel, Director of the Portland Office of Transportation.
Thanks, Commissioner. From my perspective, having the audits in hand laid out a big opportunity to make some improvements. Until you identify the essential problem, it's very difficult to tackle it in a direct kind of way. So maybe that's making lemonade out of lemons, but frankly, it really has unleashed our internal people with the help of the task force to make the improvements that were called for in those audits. Let me make a comment about the task force, too. You know, there are task forces and there are task forces. And this is of the latter category, in that these were people that really knew what they were talking about, who had both the expertise and the experience to bring to bear, and who engaged with us in feedback and providing direction around how we might better address the various issues that were before us. So I've given you a little matrix, and I want to, as Commissioner Adams has done, recognize the people internal to transportation that have been key in these changes too. Kevin Williams in maintenance, Tom Caulfield there, Ed Summers, Doug Height, Raydell Kilgore, Steve Townsend, our chief engineer, Brian Oberding, Brett Kesterson, John Riston, and Jeff Schaefer. Let me take you through this simple format, and then I'm going to turn to the task force members to make some comments following that. The first audit was around least cost. And the first recommendation there that maintenance should develop cost estimating procedures to determine when a planned paving project represents a public improvement as defined by Oregon law. You can see that our status on that is that we have developed those estimating procedures. They will be, some of them are contingent on putting in place the new asphalt standards that will be in place, we believe, in September. But we're using the improved procedures right now. So we're already using estimating procedures that have been developed and will be fully implemented in the fall. Second recommendation is that we be sure that we are reporting public improvement projects, in our case largely around the paving, that are more than 125,000 and greater than 2 inches of paving. They're defined as public improvements, to the Office of Management and Finance for inclusion in the BOLI report. We've done that. We are in full compliance right now. Third one relative to that audit was that if we were going to perform, there is an opportunity within that law for us to perform projects internally, and if we were going to do that, we needed to have adequate plans and specifications so there could be a head-to-head comparison with the private sector that would demonstrate our ability to show least cost. And we are substantially complete on that and will be fully in completion of that assignment again by September. So moving to the second audit, it's on the second page. The audit called for us to develop a preventative maintenance program to be applied to newly constructed and resurfaced streets and other streets in good condition. We're working on a pavement management system and making substantial progress on that, but it will not be fully implemented until the fall of 2008. We have developed criteria for street preservation, and we're using those right now. So to the extent of the information that we have available, we've already made a substantial change. Second recommendation is that we adopt a remaining service life approach to planning and budgeting for street preservation. This is one that we're going to come back and report that we believe there's a better way to do it. This remaining service life concept is used primarily for fixed plant and for highway as opposed to urban areas. The Pavement Oversight Task Force agreed with us that an optimization approach is a better one, and the new pavement management system comes at it from that perspective as well. I expect these two gentlemen will comment on that. The third recommendation is that we establish better procedures for categorizing and tracking street preservation work activities. The audit found that we were not breaking out into sufficient detail what was a preservation activity and what was of a different category, and that we needed to do clean tracking on that. We've set that tracking system in place and allows us to track the costs associated with them, the location of the work performed, and distinguish between rehabilitation work and preventative kind of work. We'll be fully complete on that in the fall of 2007, but we are doing the tracking right now. The last recommendation there, number four, is to evaluate the need to establish a pavement engineer position. And this has been a very difficult process. There may be two of these in the Western world. And when we went out on recruitment, the one who was an ideal candidate received a salary increase in his current position and decided to stay. So what we have done is what Kevin Spellman assures me the private sector would do. We've taken our best pavement engineer inside and provided him additional training, so we will have him fully in that position in September. Moving on to the third audit, which was around contract management practices and particularly related to asphalt. The first recommendation is that we ask the city attorney to recommend a contract amendment that would prevent early termination by contractors, except for breach of contract. We've done that. The amendments have been made. They are in place. We had four asphalt suppliers. Three of them signed them. And the rest of the story will come in the next recommendations. The second recommendation was that purchasing should not approve price increases beyond the adjustments provided for in the contracts. As of August 2006, that's happening. Bureau of Purchasing is in full compliance on that. Adjustments will only be allowed under outline standards in the supply contracts. The third recommendation is that we should abide by the city's contractual commitment to the primary vendors. And this one is a little more complicated because we had a rebate system, do have a rebate system in our current contracts. We have set up criteria for when the secondary suppliers should be used, and we are fully in compliance with those criteria at the present time. The task force recommended to us that the rebate system was not a good one and that we should go with a low bid kind of contract in our next go-round. But we're complying with it and have tight standards. Tracking is occurring, and that all of the purchases are documented right now. So under the existing contracts, we're doing as well as we can do on that one. The fourth recommendation is that PDOT develop an accurate process for identifying the most cost-effective primary asphalt vendor for each job. That's complete, and the system is currently being used. On the fourth audit, this one was around pavement quality. Our first recommendation was that, or the auditor's recommendation, it was we prepare and follow a pavement quality assurance plan that outlines procedures and individual responsibilities for monitoring asphalt quality and taking remedial action when asphalt is found to be substandard. We've developed that quality assurance plan, and again, awaiting the new asphalt contracts. It will not be fully implemented until September, but we really are working that quality assurance plan right now. The The only remaining glitch is the new contracts. The second recommendation is that we develop clear and complete specifications for the desired quality of asphalt mix. We have adopted the ODOT specifications. We had a mismatch with the standards we had in place and what was actually being supplied. We've corrected that. Our full completion will happen with the new contracts in September of this year. Third recommendation, final recommendation, is that we increase in-house technical expertise on pavement design and quality and provide more training of street preservation personnel, include pavement quality and performance measures and employee evaluations. Training has been implemented. Testing procedures have changed and are in effect. A pavement system manager has been identified, and performance measures will be included in personnel evaluations by December of this year. So I feel as though we have made huge change during the time since we received this audit. So I'd like to turn it over to Kevin Spellman and Chuck Schrader.
Mayor, Commissioners, I'd like to thank Commissioner Adams for allowing me to be part of this task force. It's been an interesting process.
Had a choice, right?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. I'd like to tell you a little about the process that we used, and because I think it illustrates the commitment on the part of PDOT. The first session we had, Drummond come and his staff come in, and to be sure that we weren't misunderstanding any part of these audits, rather than just read them, we had them present them to us. We subsequently had Jeff Baer from purchasing come in and his staff to talk about the asphalt contracts in particular. Within the task force, we had some lively debate on some issues, some more than others. We chipped away at the issues that were on the table and had to come back to some others. But I think what's important is that we recognize the leadership of Sue. She and her staff made it clear from the beginning that they were not in the business of fighting these audits. They were in the business of responding to them and accepting the recommendations when they were appropriate and challenging a couple of the areas that Sue mentioned when that was appropriate. Sue has been through these. I'll try not to be redundant. I think to some extent the audits, though, overlap and kind of go back and forth between each of them. The key issues as far as we were concerned was, one, that the city conformed to the statute. It may seem self-evident that should happen, but it wasn't happening. Now it is happening. But it's more than conforming to the statute. It's actually good practice. That process, the least cost process, is not yet complete. And I guess if there is an area of ongoing debate, that this would be it. So I would expect that you at some point will hear more about this issue. Number two was a commitment to the most effective maintenance procedures, bringing in the new pavement maintenance system and pavement engineer, I think, take us a long way down that road. The asphalt supply contracts were confusing in some ways. I think the new specs will, the new RFP and the specs will help a lot. We will be compliant with the ODOT specs, which everybody in the state understands, as opposed to some older specifications, to say the least. They will incorporate quality insurance, quality control, monetary penalties for failure on quality. The rebate system will go away. That made it very difficult for the crews to determine which plant they should call for to have the asphalt from. And the last is the commitment to quality. The new contract requirements will take care or go a long way in that regard. New emphasis on training and testing within the department, and giving the authority to the new pavement engineer to lead this entire process, I think, will help a great deal. So again, I'd like to compliment Sue and her staff in the leadership that they've shown. Chuck?
I thought this process was really remarkable, to say the least.
For the record, sir.
Charles Schrader. Sorry. It evidenced incredible cooperation between the city and labor, plus industry, something that you don't see often. It was also quite remarkable how misunderstood the actual statutes were, and the fact that, generally speaking, the city was violating the statutes daily. And remarkable that the results that we got were done so well and so quickly. The results here, I think, will serve you well. Forestall what would have been litigation in the future, I am sure, when the industry began to slow down. You didn't see it because everyone was busy, but there will be a time when they aren't. And so this process was, of course, done well and was done wisely.
And I should add that we got two in one by having Chuck on the task force. He's both a lawyer and an engineer.
Right.
So those perspectives helped a lot.
I think that's two strikes.
Well, it worked.
Thank you very much.
I just had a question. How are you going to follow up to see how the recommendations are actually being implemented?
Actually, the auditors are coming back. They've promised us that they'll return and look at us in a year rather than 18 years like the last time. and they will give a report on this as well. But we're tracking this internally. Trust me, we're tracking it internally. And in fact, it's a great source of pride to see change. I mean, when you have a problem and you make real change in it, you know, you got to feel good about that. And so we'll be tracking it from that perspective, and particularly in performance reviews as well of the people responsible. But folks that are on the line now that are actually in these crews are feeling very good about the improvement that's occurred.
These are excellent steps for PDOT. Congratulate you, Sue, and Commissioner, and all the good folks that work with you.
Well, I appreciate the help.
Thanks. And we're hoping for a representative from our partners in organized labor. Is someone here? All right. Mr. Wheaton, how are you?
I'm fine.
Good. Thanks for being here. Appreciate your thoughts on this.
My name is Robert Wheaton. I work for Labor's Local 483. I apologize on behalf of Richard Beadle and Troy Hoagland. Richard has got a doctor's appointment, and Troy's out there actually doing the work of the city paving streets as we speak. They're absolutely correct. One of the concerns that we do have is going to be regarding the cost comparison analysis. And though I can only speak peripherally because I was given this DIE report this morning at 9 a.m., I can articulate kind of abstractly their concerns, one of which is the interpretation of the statute. The statute reads that for the purposes of this section, resurfacing of highways, roads, or streets at a depth of 2 or more inches and at an estimated cost that exceeds $125,000 is a public improvement. And basically what our concern is that when we're examining this statute, we're ignoring the first part, resurfacing. The keywords are resurfacing to a depth of 2 or more inches, which we believe that most of the paving done by the city falls beneath that standard, and then the and portion. If it doesn't go over if it's less than 2 inches, the $125,000 doesn't apply. That being said, we are not afraid of going on a head-to-head comparison with any private contractor. We believe that our members can do this work far more efficiently than any private contractor out there. We feel that we've got a valuable workforce, and they can do the job the cheapest. basically it comes down to a matter of overhead versus profit motive. And we think that our overhead is lower and the profit motive is higher. Of concern, though, is how we are going to go about determining the cost, the least cost analysis. What we don't want to see is that we automatically, once this threshold is triggered, regardless of your interpretation of it, we don't want to see it automatically go to a contracting out process. First of all, our collective bargaining agreement states that before you go to a contracting process, you must demonstrate that it's going to be least cost to us. Secondly, that's what the statute requires under BOLI. Simply, it's very simple forms. It's a planned public improvement, which is, you know, basically about five, six columns that you must fill out to say that we plan to do this public improvement. And then secondly, you have to go back and fill out form WH-119 from the Bureau of Labor and Industries, which clearly states agency force estimate, how much you estimate that we're going to do the work for, and agency contract estimate, which is how much the agency assumes that the contractor is going to do it for. So if we do believe there's lots of jobs that can be done, you know, that are going to be done cheaper through a private entity just because they have additional resources that we may not have. However, you know, the idea of just automatically contracting it out is going to be something that we object to. Because the purpose of the statute is, after all, to perform the work at the least cost. And that's all I have to say.
Well, I just want to thank you and everyone at the Labors for your great partnership on this. And the points you raise are, you know, you and I are right on in sync. We're both interested in what's cheapest and best for the taxpayer. So we got additional work to do, and having you at the table makes sure that we do it well. So thank you.
Yeah, I'll pass that on because I haven't been at the table, but
well, the other folks. Thanks for filling in for them. Thanks.
Thank you.
That's it.
Anybody sign up to testify?
We have one person, Amanda Fritz.
Good morning. I'm Amanda Fritz, speaking only for myself. I'm here mainly to ask for you, please don't hold public hearings on reports unless the public has had the opportunity to review the report. I searched on Portland Online and on Commissioner Sam's site this weekend and couldn't find it. Either the search engines or the posting needs improvement. Carla Moorlove has recently, this very week, added links to the Portland City Council agenda, which links to documents pertaining to the agenda, which is absolutely wonderful, makes it much more easy for citizens to find a report and read them from our home as soon as we realize on Friday afternoon that a subject is coming up for City Council review. And citizens do care about street paving, and a few of those citizens who care a lot about street pavings would be willing to read the report and would want to comment on it. And I think it's really important that each of you, I'm asking each of you to assign someone in your office to make sure that if anything is going from any of your bureaus to the City Council agenda, that the link is provided to Carla so that that is posted on the agenda. And furthermore, that somebody be assigned to stay on Friday evening to make sure that those links are indeed up. Because we want citizens to be able to comment, especially it sounds like this report has been done very well. We want citizens to know when there are great reports that provide detailed information and good plans for moving forward, and so that we can celebrate them. And that's all I have. Thank you very much.
And point well taken. Apologize. We dropped the ball.
It's a report. I need a motion to accept.
So move.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
In addition to the thanks I've already given, I'd like to thank Roland Schapowski and Shoshana Oppenheim in my office, who worked very hard and very closely with the team before you to make this happen. Thank you, Shoshana. Aye.
Leonard?
I understand how challenging it is to be assigned a bureau that needs some significant changes and what the barriers are to do that. So I am really appreciative of Commissioner Adams' efforts, because to do the things he's done may appear to some from the outside to be reasonable things to do, but when you get stuck inside this building, reason at times goes out the window, and every effort to improve services becomes criticized from corners that you would have never imagined you would have heard from. So the changes that Sam is working on and continues to promote are ones I heartily support. I will in every instance where he is working on something like this, give him the benefit of the doubt in my support, because I think at the end of the day, he's going to have a much more efficient system for paving streets and creating sidewalks. And I totally agree with him that that's our first priority at PDOT. So I appreciate the work everybody has invested in this, and I'm really glad to support it. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I think this is a really outstanding response to an audit, and I really appreciate the thoroughness and sort of the receptiveness, as I think Sue Keel said, rather than sort of fighting recommendations, embracing recommendations and making them happen. So this is great, great example. And appreciate the work. Aye.
Potter.
Well, I really am impressed with the changes and the commitment to change by PDOT. I know that organizational change is not easy because you're not just changing widgets. It's people. It's how they've been accustomed to thinking and acting. And those kind of cultural changes are often difficult, and I know that it's not done. You folks certainly have stepped in the right direction, and I'm just very impressed. And thank you, Commissioner Adams, for your leadership on it, Sue, for yours. And I wish you folks well, and I look forward to hearing what the city auditor says about it in a year or so. I vote aye. Thank you very much. Please read the 10:30 time certain.
Item 677, adopt evacuation annex to the basic emergency operations plan.
A few months back, I had the opportunity to go to New Orleans to look at the devastation left by Hurricane Katrina. And what it did is reinforce very strongly in my mind that it is very important that every community is prepared for a disaster. And that an important part of any disaster preparedness is having a evacuation plan on how to take people from an area of danger to safety. And so this morning, we're going to be presented information from the Portland Office of Emergency Management as well as the Portland Police Bureau on the evacuation plan. There's still work that needs to be done, including a regional impact on evacuation, but I think it's a great step in the right direction, and I'm very, very pleased to present this information to Council.
Mayor, thank you, and Commissioners, good morning. I'm Brian Martinek, Assistant Police Chief for the Portland Police Bureau and Services Branch, and with me today is Captain Keith Morse and Patty Reuter from POEM. We intend today to go over the basics of the evacuation plan annex that would fit into the city's overall emergency response plan, talk to you a little bit about the incident command structure that plan would fit within, and then also Patty will talk a little bit about the current state of readiness and the next steps for us. So I think it's important for us to realize, as the mayor said, that this is going to be an ongoing process, as most plans are. Before Captain Morse takes off on the basic elements of the annex itself, I just want to make sure that I set the stage for the kind of the context of what this plan would be used in, which is within the incident command structure. And this plan, like most plans, won't answer every question that we can come up in the what if category. Since we won't know until it happens what the specifics of the incidents are, it's important for us to remember that this plan provides the structure, and as an incident commander and other agencies and this agency, I can tell you that it seems to encompass most of the things that we would need to know in terms of a framework. It'll answer questions for you as the ultimate decision makers, and it'll allow us to adapt as the situation unfolds. We are committed to a unified command structure within the ICS structure, and I think that's how we get to the answers to the questions that we won't know until they happen. So if we keep that frame of mind as we hear how this plan unfolds, I think that'll answer some of the questions that might come to you. So, Captain Morse.
Mayor, Commissioners. I'm going to talk to you briefly about the basic elements of the plan.
State your name for the record.
I'm sorry. Captain Keith Morse, Portland Police Bureau.
The plan begins with a checklist. I think you have the plan in front of you there. There are key decisions that need to be made in the event of a critical incident, particularly in regards to evacuation. There are five checklists at the front of the plan, one for you, Mayor, one for the Portland Office of Emergency Management, one for law enforcement, one for the Fire Bureau, and one for transportation. And those will be key elements to initiating an evacuation process. The second section involves the purpose of the plan. It describes the framework for the evacuation, the scale and scope of a critical incident, the applicability to any hazard, whether it be natural, chemical, or industrial, or a foreign or domestic terrorism attack, and discusses the fact that this is a plan based on the National Response Plan under the National Incident Management System with a state and local government format. And I know I'm running through this quickly, so please feel free to ask questions at the end. The next section discusses situation and assumptions. The expectation is that able-bodied persons can care for themselves, their families, their neighbors, and their friends in the event of an evacuation, and it's a responsibility of the city to primarily support those who are unable to care for themselves, which are special needs populations. It also discusses the fact that in the event of an evacuation, our resources and our ability to respond will quickly be overwhelmed, and mutual aid agreements will be essential in order to meet the expectations of that event. The next section, discusses the concept of operations, which is a primary operational response of first responders and the EOC. The first responders will evaluate the threat, establish containment, and notify the decision makers that the EOC needs to stand up. The EOC, the Emergency Operations Center, will be established, and a Disaster Policy Council made up of key bureau heads will provide information to you, Mayor, on their recommendations of whether or not we need to implement an emergency plan and an evacuation plan. Evacuation routes will be identified based on the nature of the threat, and a communications plan will be established, and the citizens of Portland will be made aware of what the situation is and what they need to do in order to care for themselves and their loved ones. We'll work on threat mitigation at that point, and ultimately, once the threat is neutralized, we will implement a recovery plan to bring people back into the communities that have been evacuated. The next section talks about specific roles and responsibilities of key stakeholders in an evacuation. Each agency has specific responsibilities, and it will be the responsibility of the Unified Command in the Emergency Operations Center to ensure that all of those individual agencies meet their individual expectations. The last piece is ongoing plan development and maintenance, and for that I'm going to refer to Patty Reuter from the Office of Emergency Management. Patty?
Thanks, Keith. Patty Reuter, Office of Emergency Management. Thank you for allowing us this time today. This annex applies to all hazards and as such is an annex to the Basic Emergency Operations Plan. Mayor, you would be receiving advice from the key bureaus and the city attorney and your chief financial officer about the consequences related to evacuation and the long-term impacts. And that's what this plan will allow you to receive and guidance to those people of what information they should be offering you. Through this planning process, we have received what information you will need to know in order to order an evacuation and how difficult it would be to evacuate the entire city. So far, through this process, we have gained knowledge about the threats that would cause an evacuation, the city's limitations, the diverse issues of our human and animal populations, what each of our bureaus are capable of doing and need to do if evacuation is ordered, and what we need to do next. With your approval of this annex, we will continue our discussions with our regional partners and our research into resources needed to execute an evacuation. A list of some of our partners are in the maintenance and development section. We will be talking to our county counterparts to develop more of the impacts of what Portland's evacuation would do to impact our neighboring counties and vice versa. We will continue our discussion with TriMet about moving large numbers of people out of the downtown core area or wherever necessary. We will research the road network and regional transportation routes to determine capacity, alternate routes, and meeting sites along those routes. We will continue our discussion with Multnomah County Emergency Management to set up agreements with multicultural agencies and 211 for messaging to populations of greater need. We'll continue to discussions with Multnomah County Animal Control to understand how Portland fits into their plans for animal movement. We'll expand our mapping of key sites in each section of the city that could care for populations of greater needs, such as hospitals, clinics, parks,